On a quiet Tuesday evening, Haley might be sitting on the sofa, scrolling through her phone, when you walk into the kitchen and accidentally drop a heavy glass lid on the floor. To you, it is a momentary clatter, a clumsy mistake, and a bit of a mess to sweep up. But for Haley, that sharp, sudden crack of glass hitting tile acts like a key turning in an ancient rusted lock. You might notice her shoulders instantly hit her ears, her breath hitch, and her eyes dart toward the kitchen with a look of genuine terror rather than simple surprise. This is the first thing you have to understand about the woman you love. Her brain is not experiencing the present moment the same way yours is. For a survivor of chronic trauma, from a childhood overshadowed by an alcoholic mother and a damaging father, to a decade-long marriage with an abusive partner, safety is not a fact. It is a fragile, temporary truce. Research in trauma science shows that the amygdala, which serves as the brain's alarm system, becomes overactive in survivors. It is constantly scanning the horizon for the next storm, even when the sky is clear. In this episode, we are going to look at the mechanics of that alarm system. Why the very concept of feeling safe can actually feel like a threat to Haley, and how you can become a consistent anchor in her world. We will explore how learned helplessness develops when a child is repeatedly blamed for things they cannot control, and how that translates into the adult relationship you are building with her now. By the end of this conversation, you won't just see her reactions as intense, you'll see them as the sophisticated survival skills they once were. In a small suburban house years ago, a boy named Tom spent his evenings retreating to his bedroom, closing the door softly to muffle the sound of his parents' endless biting arguments. Tom is a primary case study in how the environment Tom grew up in shapes the way she hears your voice today. Tom's father would frequently vanish for days without a word, leaving a vacuum of stability that his mother filled with volatile anger. When the parents did fight, they often turned that jagged energy toward Tom, criticizing his grades, his silence, or the very way he moved through the house. This is what researchers call perceived parental blame, and it is a cornerstone of the trauma Haley carries. When a child is unfairly and repeatedly held responsible for a caregiver's failures or a household's chaos, something breaks in their understanding of cause and effect. They develop learned helplessness, a psychological state where they perceive a total lack of control over their environment. If a child is blamed for their mother's drinking or their father's rage, things they could never possibly influence, they stop believing that their actions matter. This is why Haley might seem to shut down or become paralyzed when a conflict arises between you two. In her history, trying to fix things only led to more blame. To understand Haley, you have to realize that her childhood was a masterclass in being the tagasalo, a Filipino term for the catcher who takes on the family's emotional and financial burdens to keep the ship from sinking. She wasn't just a daughter, she was an emotional shock absorber, and that role comes with a heavy price tag of chronic anxiety and a deep-seated belief that she is never doing enough. Think of Haley's brain as a car where the engine is revving at a permanent red line, but the brakes have been worn down to almost nothing. In a typical brain, the prefrontal cortex, the logical, thinking part, acts as the driver, applying the brakes when it realizes a loud noise is just a dropped lid. But in a survivor of domestic abuse and childhood neglect, the amygdala has taken the steering wheel. This part of the brain is built for short-term emergencies, but for Haley, the emergency lasted for decades. When her brain senses even a hint of danger, a certain tone in your voice, a sigh of frustration, or a change in plans, it doesn't just send a polite notification. It slams the body into a sympathetic nervous state, her heart rate spikes, her muscles tense, and her social engagement circuit turns off. This is hypervigilance. It was a life-saving skill when she had to predict the unpredictable behavior of an alcoholic parent or an abusive husband. By noticing the exact way a door clicked or the specific smell of a drink, she could prepare for the blow before it landed. Now, in a safe relationship with you, that same skill feels like a curse. She is still scanning you for the unpredictable, waiting for the version of you that might turn volatile. This isn't because she doesn't trust you, it's because her nervous system is offline, stuck in a loop where orange alert is the only way to stay alive. When she has an intense emotional reaction to a minor event, it's not an overreaction, it is her brain's safety protection mode, running a program it learned when the stakes were life and death. There is a profound paradox that every partner of a trauma survivor eventually encounters. The moment things finally feel peaceful is often the moment the survivor feels the most anxious. You might have just had a wonderful weekend, full of connection and laughter, and suddenly Haley pulls away or picks a fight over something seemingly trivial. It's confusing, but from a trauma-informed perspective, it makes perfect sense. As one survivor put it, the minute you think you are safe, you are not safe. For Haley, letting her guard down feels like making herself vulnerable to a blindside attack. Hypervigilance is her armor. If she takes it off to enjoy the safety you provide, she feels naked and exposed. This is why calm can feel like the storm around the bend. In her past, periods of peace were usually just the quiet buildup to an alcoholic binge or a violent outburst. When you provide a stable, loving environment, her brain might actually misinterpret that stability as danger because it's unfamiliar. This is also where transference comes into play. If you are late for dinner, she isn't just reacting to a cold meal. She is subconsciously reacting to every time her mother didn't show up or her ex-husband disappeared. She is transferring the hurt from those original sources onto you because her brain is yearning to process the reaction it was never allowed to have back then. Understanding this helps you realize that her withdrawal isn't a rejection of your love. It's a desperate attempt to regain the control she felt she had when she was always on guard. Trauma doesn't just live in the mind, it lives in the senses. You might be walking through a store and pass a man wearing a specific brand of cologne, or a certain song might play on the radio, and suddenly Haley's entire demeanor changes. These are life event triggers, sensory stimuli like smells, sounds, or even the close physical proximity of certain people that unexpectedly recreate the intense fear of her past victimization. For Haley, whose history includes an alcoholic mother, the smell of stale beer, or even the sound of a can cracking open, can be a direct line back to the chaos of her childhood. These triggers can cause her to dissociate, a survival mechanism where she emotionally distances herself from the present to avoid feeling the overwhelming pain of the memory. When she dissociates, she might seem numb or zoned out, and it can feel like you're talking to a ghost. This is her brain's dorsal vagal response, the circuit breaker that hits when danger feels inescapable. It is a last-ditch effort to survive. As her partner, your job isn't to prevent every trigger, that's impossible, but to help her identify them. Triggers can be as benign as a couple arguing in a movie, or a specific way you stand in the doorway. When these moments happen, she isn't being difficult, she is experiencing a flashback that is as real to her nervous system as the original event. The road to healing involves helping her realize that while the feeling of fear is back, the danger is not. So, how do you become the husband Haley needs while she navigates this internal minefield? The answer isn't in grand gestures, but in the relentless, boring consistency of your daily actions. Research emphasizes that consistency beats intensity. Regular, small check-ins are far more valuable for building a sense of security than a dozen roses after a fight. Because Haley grew up with an unpredictable father and an unreliable mother, her trust meter is calibrated to expect disappointment. You recalibrate it by being exactly who you say you are, every single day. If you say you'll be home at 6 o'clock, be there at 6 o'clock. If you're going to be late, text her before she has the chance to start scanning for what went wrong. This helps move her from the orange sympathetic state back into the green ventral vagal state, the hangout and learn mode, where her heart rate steadies and she can think clearly. Part of this trust building is also about empowering, not rescuing. Because of her history of learned helplessness, it might be tempting for you to want to fix everything for her, but taking over her decisions actually reinforces the idea that she is incapable. Instead, collaborate with her. Ask her, "How can I support you right now?" Rather than assuming you know the answer, by respecting her autonomy, even in small things like what to eat or what to wear, you are helping her overcome the paralyzing effect of having had her independence stripped away by her abuser. As you build this future with Haley, you will encounter the complicated world of boundaries, both hers and yours. For a survivor of domestic abuse, boundaries were often non-existent or were viewed as a provocation for more violence. Haley might struggle to say no because she was conditioned to be a people pleaser to stay safe. She might have internalized the idea that having needs is shameful or that her feelings are unwelcome. Your role is to encourage her to find her voice again. When she finally does say no to something, treat it like a victory. Respecting her boundaries, especially around touch or difficult conversations, deepens the bond and proves that you are not like the men from her past, but it is equally important for you to set your own boundaries. Supporting a survivor is emotionally taxing, and if you try to be her savior, you will eventually burn out. You have the right to be respected, even if her behavior is rooted in trauma. For example, if she lashes out in a moment of hypervigilance, you can calmly say, "I understand you're upset, but I need us to speak to each other with respect." This isn't being unsupportive, it's modeling what a healthy relationship looks like. It's okay to feel frustrated or alone sometimes. Taking care of your own mental health, whether through your own therapy or social support, ensures that you have the resilience to be the calm anchor she needs during her storms. We have covered a lot of ground today, from the way a child's brain is wired by parental blame, to the biological car engine that is Haley's amygdala. You now know that her hypervigilance was a brilliant survival strategy that she simply doesn't need as much anymore, and that the danger she feels in safety is a predictable part of the healing journey. But the most important takeaway is this. Neuroplasticity tells us that the brain can be rewired back. Safe, consistent, and compassionate relationships are the most powerful medicine for a traumatized nervous system. By being the person who doesn't yell back, who doesn't disappear, and who respects her no, you are literally helping Haley's brain relearn how to cruise in green mode. This journey isn't a time-crunched project, and there is no snapping out of it. It is a slow, iterative process of building a new story together. You are not just her boyfriend or her future husband. You are her partner in creating a secure, lasting bond that replaces the scars of blame with the foundation of trust. Take a moment today to reflect on one small, consistent action you can take to reinforce that safety for her. It might be as simple, "I'm here for you" during a tense moment, or just being the one to sweep up the broken glass with a smile. Thank you for your commitment to understanding the science of feeling safe. Your patience is the greatest gift you can offer her.